From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
When you do a show like I do every single day, you get a lot of feedback from the audience. Now, I will tell you personally, I am grateful for that feedback. It's one of the reasons why when we made the transition to being more than just an audio show on the radio and on the podcast, being also a video show, it was one of the things that became really fun to me is you don't even have to wait until like after the show's over to get feedback. You get feedback like during the moment. People comment live in real time. And I love the interactions I'm able to have with Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers. I'm thankful for Marco's Pizza for making all of that possible. But I will admit one thing to you. There is nothing worse than getting a sort of critical piece of feedback when you realize, you know what, that's really, really true. I mean, listen, I feel like I have pretty thick skin. I certainly enjoy hearing nice things. I can deal with constructive criticism. But every now and then someone will say something about you, or in my case, me, and I'll realize, boy, that's really, really true. And there's sort of nothing worse than realizing someone that spotted a sort of a hole in your game or a potential flaw. The reason why I bring all this up is because there is something that a few of you have pointed out to me before that is completely true about me, and I'm trying to work at being better about this. What some of you have said in the past is that I have a tendency to fixate too much on like recruiting rankings and sort of prototypical size for players. And sometimes I have maybe a little bit of a bias or a prejudice against guys who don't have the exact size specifications, don't quite have the same look of the elite 4- and 5-star player, and therefore I assume that they're not going to be as good. And sometimes when these guys play and perform well for Georgia, I have a tendency to not give them enough credit because if they don't look the part, I assume they must be deficient in the role, and obviously that has a chance to be wrong. The reason why this is important for today is because of something that Jeff Sintel said yesterday on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Obviously, the big story this week has been Nadab Joseph enrolling in junior college, not being an official member of the 2018 class for Georgia. As I explained yesterday, this is not necessarily unexpected news. SEC Country had reporting on this going back to December. This had been one of those things that have been a message board conversation for quite some time. It only became official this week. But even though that it comes, you know, as not so much unexpected news, now that it is real and something that Georgia is for sure going to have to deal with, there is the aftermath of kind of what happens now. Nadab Joseph not able to contribute to potentially compete for a role on that 2-deep. He would have been a 4-star signee for Georgia in its 2018 class. You've also got the injury to Devod Wilson here, who had really drawn some rave reviews from Kirby Smart early in the spring before he got injured. You know, this is a defensive back situation that's a little tricky right now, and you're trying to figure out, even if you feel good about your starters, as we talked about yesterday, what's happening underneath that, behind that? You know, who are the guys that are going to step up and sort of fill in with some of that depth? Well, Jeff sort of rattled off a few names yesterday, and there was a name that he mentioned at the end that really kind of got me excited because I think this is going to be a fun thing for Georgia fans to sort of watch and think about a bit this summer. Let me let you hear a little bit from Jeff Sintel on yesterday's episode of our program talking about the aftermath of the Nadab Joseph junior college enrollment, the Devod Wilson injury, and all of a sudden the spotlight is going to be on a few other Georgia players because of it. Here is our buddy Jeff Sintel.
I think the Nadab Joseph news is also multiplied by the injury to Devod Wilson. Mark Webb Jr., I feel, will come back full speed and ready to go this fall. He will. That was a slight knee injury that he will be able to recover from. And also a guy like Amir Speed, that's another name where he's got a show and he's got a flash in fall camp to get into that rotation as well. And the 2018 signees now, Otis Reese is a guy that's going to get his first looks at safety. I feel that Tyson Campbell will be an immediate contributor somewhere in the rotation at star really early in his time in Athens, given his size and athleticism. And there's also the name Chris Smith as well. Chris Smith is a guy that can see a little opening like this of playing time and make the most of it. You know, I'm never going to count out Chris Smith for what he can do physically, intellectually, his toughness and his instincts. He's going to play a lot of ball for Georgia, and he's going to be maybe a more talented Aaron Davis-type player for Georgia in the secondary.
There is so much to unpack from what Jeff says there. You probably heard that on yesterday's show. I'm not trying to bring something back that you've already heard, but this is one of those things when it sort of slips past you at first glance, you don't unpack everything that there is to unpack in what Jeff Sintel has to say there, because the truth is he rattles off a lot of names. And as I said to start our program here today, and many of you who listen or watch regularly, you kind of know where I'm coming from on this. There are a few of these names that Jeff just mentioned that I have a tendency to gravitate to very naturally. Obviously, I'm obsessed with guys like Tyson Campbell. Looks the part, five-star cornerback. I expect him to come in at Georgia and really make a big name for himself during summer practice. I think he's going to play a lot this fall because that's what guys like me do. They put big expectations on five-star prospects. It's the same way for Otis Reese. You know, Kirby Smart's always been clear about the fact that Reese has that sort of prototypical safety look for a program like Georgia. For a lesser program, Reese is probably a linebacker at a place like Georgia. He's a safety, and you know, it's a high-profile recruitment. That's a flip from Michigan. That was one of those buzzworthy visits every time he came to UGA during the fall. That's a guy I focus on. Obviously, Amir Speed, Mark Webb, both, you know, guys from that 2017 class. A little bit different backstory here. Webb's a position switch. Speed's one of that group of defensive backs looking to emerge. You know, we give guys like that attention. But Jeff says something I think really interesting here when he brings up the name Chris Smith, the cornerback signee from the class of 2018 from Hapeville Charter, the same school, by the way, that produced William Poole. He says, and I love Jeff's phrasing on this, he says, I'm never going to count out a guy like Chris Smith. Now, why would Jeff say it that way? Because y'all know. Because some people will count out Chris Smith, because Chris Smith doesn't have the same size specs that some of the, you know, prospects do. He didn't generate as much buzz on the recruiting trail as maybe some of the other guys that either Georgia was chasing or Georgia signed. But Jeff sort of lays out the criteria right there for why Chris Smith is one of these guys. With the absence of Nadab Joseph and the injury to Devaud Wilson, all of a sudden this 2018 signee is going to have a big opportunity waiting for him this summer, and I think it's going to be really interesting to watch him sort of play that out. I love the comparison even that Jeff makes between Smith and Aaron Davis, another guy that I was guilty from his entire career. I mean, I'm just telling you right now, it's just a fact. I was guilty of, throughout Aaron Davis' entire career, of just simply not giving him enough credit, assuming that this former walk-on would at one point in time be passed up and that somebody else was just going to play better defensive back for Georgia. But he used his experience. He used his will. I mean, he just had, you know, a relentless effort and will. He just used that to make himself into a college football player that Georgia's going to really miss. And I think it's very interesting that Jeff Sintel says Chris Smith could be just like Aaron Davis. Now, Smith's a more highly recruited player even than Aaron Davis was, but you sort of get the comparison here. On yesterday's show, Jeff went into a little bit more detail about exactly what it is that he likes about Chris Smith and pretty soon what everyone's going to like about this 2018 signee.
Simply put, this is what I always say about Chris Smith II. I think he's going to be a phenomenal football player at some point of his career at Georgia, and I think he's even going to be an even greater success in life off the field. He just has every element, checks every box, and, of course, he's not 6'2 and 195 pounds, but that's okay. Georgia, in his scheme, they can use a guy like Chris Smith, and he can make a lot of plays for the Bulldogs in the years to come.
Now, the truth is Smith is a guy that I also have great affection for, because if you're a longtime either follower of Dog Nation or listener viewer to Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, you know we've had a chance to interview Chris Smith here a couple of times. Most recently in January at the Touchdown Club of Atlanta Awards Banquet, and going back to December, he was with us for one of our Marlowe's Tavern broadcasts. And y'all, if you weren't in the room with us there that night, I forget which location we were at, Chris just owned the room, man. I mean, everybody was hanging on his every word. He told great stories. He was funny. And you really got a sense for why a recruiting expert like Jeff Sintel would expect things from Chris Smith to maybe come in and compete in a big way this summer and really work hard during practice. No promises about where he ends up on the 2D, but working really hard in practice and making a name for himself, you kind of understand where all that comes from. I mean, in Chris Smith's own words, he has been through a lot to get to the point where he is now. I love the very funny story he told of the somewhat rugged Spartan conditions in which he and his teammates practice with every day at Hapeville Charter. You certainly understand, you know, how hard he's had to work to get to the point where he is now, because those nice, well-manicured practice fields at UGA, nothing like what he dealt with growing up in high school, and I think he's used that to his advantage. Here's a little bit of Chris Smith in his own words talking about where he's had to practice to get to the point where he can be on a Georgia practice field later on this summer.
Oh, that practice field is crazy. It's like a big patch of dirt and grass. And in the middle, it's like this super huge rock. It feels like a volcano is like coming out the ground or something like that. Like, it's really crazy, man. We got the interstate like probably like 50 feet away to the right of us. We got a street like 2 feet away to the left of us. Balls going the street all the time. They stay getting hit by cars. No fence. No light, so we got to make sure we get to practice early when it's daylight savings time, so it doesn't get dark while we're practicing. It's a lot. I wish you guys could see it. We don't have a field goal. It's like this little white thing. Like, it doesn't have uprights. It just has boom, boom, like that. Like,
it's PVC pipe is what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
You hear Jeff Centel there at the end, and don't you love that contrast in an era where there's personal coaches and big bucks being spent on individual training? This is where Chris Smith, it's almost like a Rocky IV type story. This is where Chris Smith's practicing every single day, and he's worked his way to the point now where a guy like Jeff Centel comes on our show yesterday and says, watch out for this guy making a big name for himself this summer, given some of the turmoil that's gone on with Georgia with its defensive back rotation. And part of that's just the motivation that Smith brings to the table. The practice field that he just described, he says that he and his high school teammates actually found a way to use that to their advantage. Here's a little bit more from Chris Smith.
The thing I like about our field, it is so rugged and so messed up that when we get on a flat field, we're moving at tremendous speed.
Like, yeah.
It's us practicing on that flat field, having to go through them drills. When we get on the flat field, you can see the difference in speed. So we're already going fast on that kind of field. Imagine when we get on the flat field. And with our field, we like to look at it as kind of an advantage. You know, this is what we do. We're gonna come out. We got it out of the mud. So since we got out of the mud and we competing with these teams and they have all this other stuff, there's no doubt in our mind that we could beat them no matter what.
The bottom line for me is I think that Jeff Centel describes it perfectly when he says, you know, that some people may count out a guy like Chris Smith, but don't count him out at UGA. I think that fans are going to see that with their own eyes. And when you hear a guy like that talk right there, so great with the media, so great telling stories, I think he's going to grow to be a big-time fan favorite at UGA here over the course of the next few years. And eventually, I do think he's going to be a big part of this program. And I think the opportunity, some negative circumstances for some players, opens up a big door for him. And I think that Chris Smith is going to play that's going to boldly walk right through it. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented by Marco's Pizza. We're glad you're with us on video, live every day at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook, Dog Nation YouTube page, Dog Nation Twitter feed. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, the world famous DogNation.com. We're just glad you're with us, and we're certainly thankful to have Marco's Pizza making everything possible every single day. And they invite you to say hello to authentic Italian quality pizza from Marco's, where you get fresh made dough, an original sauce recipe, and three signature cheeses on every pizza. Enjoy two medium, two topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. Every store, every day, the Italian way. Hello, Primo. At participating locations, you can check that out. We'll have Mike Johnson, my partner and buddy from SEC Country Life, coming up a little bit later on. We'll deal with him with a lot of the stuff that's sort of been going on around the Georgia program here this week. You know, offensive line stuff. Mike's obviously an expert on that. He'll also weigh in on the challenges facing the Georgia secondary now that a couple of those incoming freshmen that you thought might be able to contribute to your depth, that they're not going to be here with you this summer. Mike will kind of weigh in on that. He has been through a lot of these rigorous training camps over the years, and he's a great expert to have on that subject. Before we do that, though, there are a couple of things that I want to hit, and I may actually have to wait and do one of these later on in the program. I want you to hear a couple of pieces of audio. It'll be Nick Saban later on in the show because I'm running a little late right now. But let me do this instead. WJOX is a sports radio station in Birmingham, Alabama. They talk a lot of college football. And, you know, I pay close attention to what they're doing just because, you know, they love college football as much as I do. And on one of their shows recently, they had on Phil Steele. Now, y'all know, and I've even seen some stuff on Twitter about this over the course of the last couple of days, y'all know that I love the preseason magazines. I like reading that kind of stuff. I like that sort of fodder for debate. It just kind of gets me going. It's fun as a way of passing the time before the season begins. And Phil Steele, if you're not aware, is one of the more famous college football analysts that writes his own magazine. And every year, one of the things that he does is look for those teams that were bad a year ago that might be improved this upcoming year. And this may catch the eyes of some Georgia fans or the ears of some Georgia fans. Phil Steele on WJOX thinks one of those improved teams this year could be Florida. Here is audio of him explaining why.
My most improved team this year, I'm going with the University of Florida. I think if it could go wrong, it went wrong last year for Florida. The suspended players, the injuries, losing the coach. And now they get a head coach in Dan Mullen stepping in there who – as always, overachieved my expectations. To be honest with you, I've always picked Mississippi State sixth or seventh in the West. They always finish higher than a lot. So I think Mullen, when he inherits 19 returning starters, will have Florida playing much better ball this year.
Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, and I know I'm sort of preaching to the choir when I say this, but I don't say this just because I think it's what you want to hear. I think it's honestly true. I am not the least bit worried about Florida. Now, if you want to talk to me about going on the road to LSU, it could be a tough game. I think Auburn's a very formidable opponent. In fact, some of you tell me you wish I'd stop saying that about Auburn. You think I say it too much. So when I think that Georgia's got a tough game coming, I'll certainly tell you that. I do not think that Florida's a tough game for Georgia this year. I think this idea from Phil Steele that Mullen's going to slide in and be some sort of savior, I think that is not likely to happen. I think that players save programs. I don't think coaches do. I think that Mullen is a good coach, but I think he's working with the roster that he has at his disposal right now. And that roster, because of the inefficient recruiting of Jim McElwain, is just deficient here. So I am not the least bit worried about Dan Mullen there at Florida, but I think it's interesting to find out that Phil Steele, at least according to a Birmingham radio interview, is. It is good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We got a lot of fun coming. As I told you later on, a clip from Nick Saban I'm thinking you're going to like. Let's get ready to enjoy Mike Johnson right now. Good to have you with us. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Thanks for listening to us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We do have a little bit of, a technical issue going on right now. The phone line is down. The way that we act, you know, get with our guests and communicate with them on a regular basis, it looks like we're just not even getting a line, right? Not even getting a signal. That is completely down here at the moment, so that is kind of interesting. So what we'll do with as a replacement here is we will take a lot of your comments. Now, by the way, if you listen to the show on the radio or if you listen on the podcast form, I know you don't get a chance to, you know, sort of speak and talk in real time. I do get that. So you can always reach out to me at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. But for the folks who are watching us live right now, we'll get a chance to sort of talk about anything you want to talk about when it comes to UGA athletics. I'm going to play a little audio here from Nick Saban in a few minutes as well. Normally we don't do a lot of Saban audio, but I think this is going to be kind of a fun one for a lot of UGA fans, because I think it sort of speaks to a new attitude in Tuscaloosa, maybe some concern about how Georgia is kind of getting in there and doing some work when it comes to recruiting trail. We'll do that here coming up in just a moment. I'll also say this, not to whine here, but it's been quite a week for us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Go back to Monday where you had the fire drill. We had the issue with that. No Facebook comments yesterday. Today, the phone line's not working. You know, I feel like I should go back on vacation here, because it's 3 days in a row where you've dealt with a pretty significant issue. But listen, we will soldier through. We'll do the best we can. Alan Verbacek checks in on Facebook, says, "I'm here now. What did I miss?" Alan, we were waiting for you to get here. So now we're glad you're here. We'll get ready to have a lot of more comments and a lot more fun coming up here. I'll also pull up on YouTube and get some of those conversations here coming up pretty soon. Jeff Purcell, by the way, to go back to what we talked about earlier in the program about, you know, what Phil Steele had to say about Florida. Jeff says that the Dogs are going to score more than 30 on the Gators with a dominating offensive line and running backs. Yeah, listen, I just don't think there's a whole lot of reason for concern right now about Florida. When I think of chief competition for Georgia, you know, the only team in the East that I think is even capable of giving Georgia a tough game right now is South Carolina. And Georgia's still going to be, you know, about a 2-touchdown favorite on the road in Columbia there. I don't think, you know, that Tennessee or Florida really even the same conversation with UGA when it comes to a program like South Carolina, which is probably a top 25 team this year, which is going to have a real, you know, legitimate threat both in special teams and the wide receiver position like Deebo Samuel. I think that's the kind of team that can cause some trouble for Georgia. I don't think that Tennessee or Florida brings that to the table right now. Until those programs have more time to recruit, can bring in more elite players, I think that the sweat jobs from Georgia, the games you have to worry about, are against those programs from the SEC West, and frankly, those programs sometimes from outside the SEC, like in Oklahoma and the college football playoff a year ago. You know, Florida and Tennessee just don't have the rosters right now to match what's going with the University of Georgia there. Lionel Kawaki, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, Lionel asking about N'Kobe Dean. We talked about James Cook a little bit earlier. Lionel asking about N'Kobe Dean. I mean, the one thing that, and Jeff briefly mentioned N'Kobe yesterday when he was on the show, but the one thing that you see going on with N'Kobe Dean right now, that elite linebacker from Mississippi, is it seems like this relationship with Georgia is very real. It seems like, you know, multiple visits here to UGA. I know he's coming, his upcoming visit, I think, involves some high school teammates. Sometimes you think when that goes down, maybe this is N'Kobe trying to do them a solid, get them some attention from some big-time programs like UGA. But he certainly visited Georgia plenty on his own to, you know, validate the fact that N'Kobe Dean seems like he's got some real UGA interest, and he is more than just an insurance policy after Owen Popo's decision to commit to Auburn. You know, Dean is a lights-out, truly elite linebacker. And one of the things that I think that Kirby Smart does really, really well is create the perception that scholarships at Georgia are scarce. You know, he creates the perception that when you have an opportunity to accept an offer from UGA, you better accept it quick. Otherwise, there are players just as good as you who we're going to be talking to. That's what Kirby Smart would say. And you see that. You know, Tresman Marshall's taken some visits here to Florida State. He's taken some visits here to Auburn. There's been some online chatter, 24/7 sports crystal ball type stuff of Marshall flipping from UGA to a place like Florida State. Well, with him doing that, I mean, you know, how quickly does the, you know, Rian Davis talk, you know, pop up of, you know, if Marshall's trending this way, then Davis is trending towards Georgia. You know, Kirby always kind of creates that belief, that image that there's somebody else to take the scholarship spot if you decide that you don't want it. And that is the way that the recruiting game is going to be played. This is a fast-paced, quickly moving world. Players want to beat the very best program they can possibly be. Georgia wants to find the best 25 or round about 25 they can get in a year. And, you know, it takes sort of a you have to cast the vision and sort of create the perception that these scholarships are scarce and everybody wants them. And Kirby Smart does a really good job of doing that. Nick Lurch says the phone lines and the fire drill. Yeah, I mean, it's been that kind of week for us, Nick, here when it comes to a lot of that kind of stuff. Miriam Martin Corbin, by the way, to go back to the comment about Dan Mullen and what Florida's going to do this year, she says Dan Mullen is mediocre at best. I mean, I think that Mullen is a good coach. I think that good coaches can only save you so much, though. I think that programs are created by players, and you're either the kind of, you know, coach that brings in players or you're not. You know, Mullen had to sort of do more with less at Mississippi State, but that's not what you do at Florida. At Florida, you're supposed to be a macro program. You're supposed to be bringing in 4- and 5-star guys. I mean, I think, I'm not going to lie to you, I think that Dan Mullen and Florida have taken way too many commitments from sort of 3-star, you know, guys outside the top 700. That's not what Florida's supposed to be doing. And every time you see Florida taking a commitment from a player who's, you know, kind of on the fringes of being SEC ready and SEC eligible, really, even from a size and skill standpoint, I think that'll put a little tiny smile on Georgia fans' faces, because that's more distance the Dogs, with Kirby Smart's recruiting efforts, are putting between themselves and their number one rival, the Florida Gators. Over here on YouTube for a moment, Enrique Murillo says about Missouri. He says Missouri didn't beat anyone. They came to play a Georgia and caught us off guard. It won't happen again. This is in reference to, you know, the teams from the East that Georgia ought to be scared of. And, you know, Georgia does go on the road to Missouri. And I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, if you pay attention to the ESPN FPI data, believe it or not, Missouri is actually, from that standpoint, Georgia's third toughest game. When they released this stuff, it was a couple of months ago. You would have no surprise at who, like, the two top ones were. It's LSU and Auburn. Those are the two toughest games for Georgia. I would have assumed that South Carolina would then, from a data standpoint, be viewed as Georgia's third toughest game, but it wasn't. The third toughest game for Georgia was that road trip at Missouri. When you think about going into the opposing stadium of what could potentially be a first-round draft pick quarterback in Drew Locke, and I guess Locke's going to have a chance to maybe even be the number one pick overall in the 2019 draft, that can be a tough spot here. But as I think Enrique pointed out, you know, Columbia, Missouri has not been a tough spot for Georgia. You know, Georgia, you know, did have the sort of late game save in Jacob Eason's year of 2016, but, you know, the year before that is 34-0, and the trip to Columbia there in what, 2012, that was the old man football game when, you know, Georgia just blasted Sheldon Richardson and Missouri in a big way there that day. Going to Columbia hasn't been too much of a problem for UGA. Their one loss to Missouri did come in 2013. So it's always been a little bit of a false narrative. You know, it is embarrassing for Georgia that Missouri won the East the 2 years in a row in which Missouri won. And that's obviously, you know, a year in which I think Georgia had a case to be the best team in the East both those times. And they, you know, allowed Missouri to kind of come in here and win this division. But Georgia only lost to Missouri in one of those seasons. The second Missouri East Division win was a 34-0 final. So, you know, it's sort of a complicated history that Georgia has had with Missouri since the Tigers have been in the SEC here. Ty Middlebrook, by the way, on the subject of Missouri, also on YouTube, says, don't forget Derek Dooley's the new offensive coordinator there at Missouri, and he's going to slow down that offense. I also kind of agree with Ty on this. You know, last year, Missouri had one of the real sharp offensive coordinators in the entire sport. It's Josh Heupel, who was obviously a former Oklahoma quarterback. I believe he was the quarterback in the year that Bob Stoops won the national championship back in 2000. He'd been a really good play caller at Utah State, goes to Missouri, had great success. He's now head coach at UCF. Derek Dooley becomes the offensive coordinator there, and I have no idea if he's going to be wearing ugly yellow gold pants the way that he wore ugly orange pants at Tennessee. I don't know if he's going to be doing that or not, but my assumption is that Derek Dooley is going to be a big downgrade as an offensive coordinator, because the fact is, if Dooley was good enough to be an offensive coordinator, if he was good enough to be a play caller, he would have been calling plays somewhere before this year, because really smart play callers are just a scarce commodity. In the NFL, where Dooley was most recently coaching, in college, there's just not enough offensive coordinators to go around. So the fact that Dooley's only now becoming a play caller after his, you know, name's been out there, he's former Tennessee head coach, for goodness sakes, my assumption is that this is a stopgap measure here. I don't think that Dooley's going to be some innovative offensive mind. Brian Kephart says Eddie is ready for Mullen. For those of you that are not aware, either if you listen to the show, you don't get to see what goes on here on our in our studio or what. Eddie is sort of the unofficial mascot for Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We call him Blind Eddie because of Dan Mullen's comment about even a blind squirrel can find a nut in reference to George winning the SEC championship. Earlier today, Eddie fell completely off our desk here. Hold on one second. Sorry about that. Eddie fell completely off our desk here. He lost his blindfold. It was kind of a mess here for what goes on with Eddie there. So I got to get him back on the set here, because it would not be an episode of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza if we didn't have him right here with us. And certainly glad that he's here. And you guys are always so good to let us know if Eddie's not where he's supposed to be. Enrique Murillo, also on YouTube, says that BA's right. Derek Dooley's going to make Missouri a mediocre team, especially on the offensive side. And, you know, for a long time, that Missouri bunch was obviously really good on defense. And it's kind of funny how that's changed. You know, Craig Kuligowski was their very good defensive line coach. He left Missouri to go to Miami. He's actually, ironically, now back in the SEC at Alabama. But in his departure, you know, you don't really have those Michael Sam, Shane Ray, Sheldon Richardson, Harris. I'm forgetting some of the other names there. You don't have that big-time pass rusher waiting in the wings there, it seems like, anymore. What used to be a really physical defense is not really what it once was there. That's one of the things in which Missouri's sort of really changed on when it comes. Jeff Purcell also talking about C.J. Clark, the big defensive lineman from North Carolina. Yeah, this is one of those guys that I think Georgia's interest in him has certainly grown a lot, and, you know, Clark's interest in Georgia's either always been strong or now he's sort of thought to be a Georgia lean. And the thing that you like about Clark is that he sort of fits that classic, and I'm no, you know, X's and O's expert. You know, I don't use zero gap, one gap language and things like that, you know, too much here. But in terms of being that true classic nose guard and that 3-4 defense, it seems like Clark is big enough to be that guy. And I think, if I'm assuming correctly here, it's one of the reasons why Georgia has remained high on him in comparison to some of the other defensive linemen who, you know, maybe the interest has been a little hot and cold, just given the fact that, you know, that Clark fits that size quotient I think that Georgia really needs right now. That's kind of my opinion on that. DeMayer, by the way, welcoming in to the program here. He's shouting out Camden County. By the way, coming back from vacation the other day, I drove through Camden County to get back home, you know, right down there at St. Mary's and right down at the Georgia-Florida border right there on 95. You're talking about a beautiful area. Not only does Camden County play really good high school football, that is a beautiful, beautiful area too. So always good to have some folks from down there in St. Mary's checking out the program. Camden County, great program, beautiful area near the Georgia coast, really fun stuff. Also here on Facebook, and by the way, if you're just joining us, I'll explain what's going on here. Normally, this is the program, the part of the program where we have a guest. Our guest today on a Wednesday, just like always, was going to be the former Alabama All-American, my partner from SEC Country Live, Mike Johnson. But our phone line is down, and some of you asked us who we have our service with. The truth is, I don't know, and that's probably part of the problem here. But our phone line is down. We can't take Mike on the air, so we are taking your comments in place of Mike, and we certainly appreciate you bringing so many of them in. And, of course, if you're listening on the radio or checking us out in podcast form, you can also comment on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. I love hearing from you there, too. Jay Wise on Facebook says, I watched the replay of the national championship game, and the Dogs were dominating that game so much through 3.5 quarters, and it was so obvious the bias calls. My question is, do you think they need to expand the ability of coaches to challenge calls made? So here's my thought on that. I think the problem with challenging the kind of calls that you're talking about here is that there's always going to be an element of you know, judgment involved here that I don't know that instant replay corrects. Now, if you want to talk about a team that we're all fans for, like the Georgia Bulldogs, obviously I would love for replay to step in and say, oh, you know what, Tyler Simmons was not offsides. He was onsides. You'd love to be able to do that. But it's sort of, you want to take it outside the realm of a Georgia game and just look at, you know, two other teams that you don't have an emotional interest in, if every sort of bang-bang judgment call was then subject to be reviewed, I think the games get longer, and I don't know that the calls themselves get more accurate. So I'm right there with you in terms of being frustrated by, you know, what happened for Georgia against Alabama. I mean, you know, I responded and reacted to that in the moment emotionally just like you did. I'm sort of weird in this regard, and maybe I'm just 1,000 years old here, but I don't really view expanded replay as much of a solution for the stuff that's wrong with sports, if you want to take it to, like, you know, Major League Baseball. I mean, I think Major League Baseball misuses its replay all the time. I watch the NFL games. I think that the replay stuff there ends up, you know, not really helping get some of these calls correct, because it becomes the judgment of what is or isn't a catch, and sometimes replay only seems to make that more confusing, which is to say nothing of basketball, which seems to make these fourth quarters, or if you're watching college, the second halves, just sort of stretch on for infinity. So I am not that big of a replay fan, but I understand the frustration when it comes to the national championship. All right. Thank you for your comments. We're going to have more here on video coming up later on. Of course, you can always reach out on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. But for now, let's get you updated on everything else happening around the rest of the SEC as we do our SEC through.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC through.
And one more quick apology from me here in terms of not having Mike Johnson, our regular Wednesday guest. We actually have a really fun guest scheduled for tomorrow. Hopefully we'll be able to get the phone line stuff taken care of before that happens, because obviously you want to be able to hear from guests here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. So we'll get that squared away, get that taken care of, and we will do just that. All right, let me do a couple of SEC-related stories here. I'd love to have you check us out on SEC Country Live at 3 p.m. This afternoon Eastern Time on the SEC Country video channels. And one of the stories we are no doubt going to talk a good bit about today is our buddy Mike Griffith from there at SEC Country had a really interesting story on the Tennessee page there about former Auburn coach Terry Bowden. Mike reached out to Bowden and asked him to weigh in on the situation at Tennessee. And what Bowden said here I thought was really interesting. He talked about the relationship between Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer, and he had some nice things to say about Jeremy Pruitt, but he said that really, and I'll give you the full, you know, extended quotes later on this afternoon on SEC Country Live, but in Bowden's perception, he views Fulmer as more important to the Tennessee turnaround, what, you know, Vols fans hope ends up being a Tennessee success story. Bowden views Fulmer as more important in that, more crucial in that, than Jeremy Pruitt. Now, I got to tell you, this is another example of something that, you know, if that quote were to get back to Jeremy Pruitt, he'd never say it publicly. But that's the kind of stuff that's going to bother him, right? I mean, it's the kind of thing that sort of sets us up for that potential power struggle of, you know, let's say, and obviously UGA fans hope this doesn't happen, but let's say that Tennessee eventually does have some success. Can you imagine Jeremy Pruitt, who's finally got a head coaching job, who took the Tennessee job when a lot of other people did not want it? And can you imagine if he had some, you know, early success there with the Vols, and then when it's all said and done and he's ready to sort of take some of the credit for that? If you've got people, you know, ex-SEC coaches saying, well, the guy that really deserves the credit here is the athletic director, Philip Fulmer, a guy that there were plenty of back-channel conversations and reports that suggested that, you know, he would have liked to have been Tennessee coach again. That's the kind of thing where big, strong personalities and, let's face it, some egos here, I don't think that sits well there. And I think that, once again, this is an example of this relationship between Fulmer and Pruitt is on the kind of ground that's going to be hard to maintain over the course of a long-term relationship. Because, once again, Terry Bowden, even in these words to Mike Griffith at SEC Country, talked about the advice that that Fulmer is going to be able to give Pruitt. And obviously, you know, Pruitt's not, you know, such an egomaniac that he doesn't think there are things that Fulmer has done that Pruitt hasn't done yet. Maybe some ideas that he has that, Pruitt hasn't, you know, come around to yet. But overall, you know, one of the reasons why you've got younger, energetic Jeremy Pruitt in place there now instead of the older, more stately Philip Fulmer is because some of the ideas that the old school Fulmer may have may just be wrong. I mean, you know, listen, Georgia fans love Mark Richt to death, but some of the new energy that Kirby Smart's brought to UGA, even you know, unabashedly big Richt fans like the new energy of Kirby Smart. So not everything that's older is better in this case, and just because you've got experience doesn't mean you're smarter than the young guy coming in. Some of the experience you have may not have been with the most innovative tactics the coaches use today. By the way, speaking of coaches and, you know, sort of a tumultuous offseason, obviously there at one point in time have been some rumors that Scott Frost, who was at UCF a year ago, might end up going to Florida. The tie there is obvious. Orlando's not that far from Gainesville. Ultimately, it does not happen, though. And there were some kind of interesting quotes that a Nebraska assistant gave to a newspaper out there in Nebraska about why it is that Frost didn't go to Florida, that apparently he was close, at least according to this one Nebraska assistant, he was close to getting that Florida job, but the deal breaker ended up being that he wanted to bring his entire staff from UCF with him to Florida, and Florida would not let him do that. And I think this is an example, and I don't like giving Florida credit, but I think this is an example of Florida just being smart. Because, you know, to go back to the conversation we had earlier in the program, programs are not saved by smart coaches. They are saved by good players. And Scott Frost, one of the things that always made me feel like he would have been wrong for Florida, and as a Georgia fan, I would have been somewhat happy had they hired him, is the fact that, you know, he likes this, you know, image of being the genius coach, the guy that's, you know, been tutored by some of the brilliant coaching minds in the sports past, and somehow he's going to outsmart the rest of the SEC. I think he's going to Nebraska thinking he's going to do the same thing there in the Big Ten West. But what Florida knew is you can't bring in a bunch of assistant coaches here who don't have ties to the SEC and don't understand the rigors of SEC recruiting. You'd be, fall flat on your face as a failure if that were to happen. I think it's weird that Scott Frost was not aware of that, at least according to this report. But in this case, Florida was, which I think does sort of speak well of the Gators, which speaking well of the Gators is not something I like doing. Let me do one more story here before we close up the SEC through. I saw where South Carolina quarterback commit Ryan Helinski, who, you know, had gotten an offer recently from Ohio State, kind of put that out on social media, has also recently gotten an offer from USC here as well. Now, the interesting thing with Helinski, by the way, you know, at one point in time, he was thought to be close with Georgia. Georgia had tried to kind of get in there on him. And then, you know, he commits to South Carolina, but then it's bad blood, seemingly, between Helinski and South Carolina. He had publicized some of his offers, but when South Carolina extended some other offers to other quarterbacks, he didn't like that too much. There, I think, is some thought out there that Helinski, whose reputation as a quarterback has really grown in a year where there are not a lot of elite quarterbacks, maybe he may not be long for the Gamecocks. And as these big-time offers come rolling in, you start to wonder if that really is true, that at some point in time, if he's just going to get too much attention to stick with a program that's sort of not thought of as kind of a hotbed for the quarterback position. But kind of interesting there, the quarterback that at one point in time Georgia was involved with, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, coming up here in a moment, I want to do our Dog Day Q&A here today. And if you don't mind, let me preview this, and we'll get some comments on it in a moment. We started the show by talking about Chris Smith and what Jeff Sentell said about the 2018 cornerback signee on the program yesterday. And, you know, hearing Jeff and his positive praise for Smith kind of gets me excited about him in the same way I'm excited about many of Georgia's incoming freshmen. That actually leads us to our Dog Day Q&A question today, and you can either weigh in on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily or here live on video in our comment section. Which incoming freshman for Georgia this season are you most excited about? Now, Justin Fields is an obvious answer here. I know that's clearly a fan favorite and a focus of a lot of attention, but maybe there's some other names out there as well of UGA incoming freshmen that you're looking forward to seeing. You can weigh in on that with our Dog Day Q&A here today on Marco's Pizza's Dog Nation Daily. All right, before that, I was going to do this earlier in the show, but I have a tendency to sort of talk too long sometimes. We ran out of time on doing this. Let me let you hear a little piece of audio from Nick Saban, if you don't mind. Let me set this up. I'll explain it, and then we will talk about it. So Saban does his charity golf tournament. It's called Nick's Kids. It's a charity that's near and dear to his heart. I think that Saban does a good job with this kind of stuff. And, you know, the subject comes up of the boat that broke down. Do y'all remember this? I was on vacation when this happened. But Saban, some of his players were out there on the lake, and the boat broke down. And, you know, one of the reporters said, in light of that, you know, is this an example of maybe you guys having more fun than some of the rest of sort of college football gives you credit for? And I thought that Saban gave kind of an interesting answer to this. I think for Georgia fans, there's a relevance here, which I'll explain after you hear Nick Saban in his own words.
You know, there's some myths about Alabama football that we sort of fight all the time in recruiting. Things like it's no fun, it's all business, and that's not true at all. I think Minka said it best when, you know, he said, I didn't come to Alabama to have fun, but I had more fun there than any time in my life. So I think we just try to show the other side that our players do have a lot of fun. We have a lot of togetherness, a lot of camaraderie in what we do. Alabama's a special place, and I think when you go there, you find that out and you relate to it, and people have a lot of pride in it. So we're just trying to show that side of the program a little bit more, but we're still committed to the same things in terms of helping players be more successful in life for having been involved in the program.
I think this is a really interesting piece of audio, and while Saban at no point mentions Georgia, I have to think it's the presence of a rising power like Georgia that makes Saban even worried about stuff like this. I mean, go back to a couple years ago. Was Alabama in any form or fashion worrying about the perception of the Crimson Tide? Was this the kind of thing that Nick Saban spent 2 minutes talking about or even 5 minutes thinking about? There's not a whole lot of evidence to suggest that he was, because at that point in time, Alabama was really getting any player that it wanted. Not only was it sort of dominating the Southeast, but it was sort of beating out Georgia for players in the state of Georgia. But if you go back and look at 2018, that didn't happen quite as much. Georgia got players that Alabama wanted. It happened some in 2017 with guys like Walter Grant, D'Angelo Gibbs, and it happened even more in 2018. I think Alabama noticed that, and I think Alabama's made a lot of changes to its program here over the course of this offseason to put a better recruiting machine in place for 2019. And part of that involves changing the perception of the program to say that we are having fun here, and this is not just sort of old, stale Nick Saban, you know, dusty, you know, relationships with players, that he can be energetic and create the kind of program that Kirby Smart can at a UGA. I think it's really interesting. You know, Alabama, to its credits, recruited pretty well thus far for the 2019 cycle. But clearly they're noticing some of the things that are happening around them. It's not just Georgia, by the way. It's probably a program like Clemson as well. But clearly the rise of programs like that have certainly made Nick Saban maybe a little bit more self-conscious in the Alabama program overall kind of as well, which means I think that Georgia must be doing something right. All right, we'll get ready to wrap up the program here today, and didn't have a ton of time for our Dog Day Q&A and had sort of a weird schedule in the program today anyway. So if you want to hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, you can weigh in on the incoming freshman that you're most excited to see, or if you're watching live on video, we'll take a lot of your comments on this coming up in just a moment. I will say for me personally, I'll give you two quick names here, one on defense, one on offense. You know, the more we talk about, you know, the notion of needing to replace Roquan Smith, I'm not telling you this young man's going to do this right away, but I think that a big spotlight on Channing Tindall here. He's a defensive player that I'm really looking forward to seeing. And on offense, we mentioned this a couple times this week. It would not surprise me at all if Jamari Salyer ends up being a freshman starter on the Georgia offensive line, either early in the season or at some point in time during the year. With that said, let's close things out the way we always do. It's our Gatorade countdown. We think 136 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville, beats Florida again, and my, won't that be fun. We'll see you tomorrow.